Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. And if you have been enjoying this podcast, we would like to especially invite you to comment wherever you get your podcast, rate us, especially on iTunes. I am told that's a place where lots of people find out about podcasts, and like and share our posts on social media. We hope you'll do that because it'll help more and more people find us. We're catching on in some ways, and we'd like to catch on even more. So Judy, tell us about the topic today.
Our topic today is, what is faith?
What is faith, indeed? And I think I mentioned this in our last episode. If there's one thing that differentiates the book that this whole podcast is based on, it's really my treatment of faith. So let me mention the book while we're on the subject. The name of the book is Reigniting the Spark: Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And we've been sort of working our way through the chapters, and we're up to the chapter on faith. And the 7-word formula that this podcast is based on is,
be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
And indeed, we are now in the third section of that. We're in the have faith section. So the chapter title we're working off is, what is faith? So I suppose I ought to say what I meant by faith.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us what your definition of faith is? Because I'm sure a lot of people have very, very different definitions.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways of looking at the concept. The way I came up with it, the construction I use for faith is when you accept that reality is right. So what do I mean by all of that? First of all, why didn't I just sort of assume that people know what faith is? You know, when somebody says they're a person of faith, that has a lot of connotations for people. And I did realize in, you know, coming up with my own, you know, carefully worded definition of faith, that I better be careful not to define something that's so different from the usual understanding of faith that, you know, I should have just come up with a different word for it. So my idea of faith, I think, overlaps a lot with religious faith, but it's not identical to religious faith. I mentioned this in the book. You know, I've known people over the years who aren't religious particularly, and aren't necessarily, they wouldn't call themselves spiritual either. You know that one? A lot of people say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual.
Right.
I'm often not real sure what that means. But I'm not talking about that. I've known people who wouldn't particularly think much about things in religious or spiritual terms, but nevertheless seem to me to be people of faith. Mm-hmm. And conversely, I've known people who are very involved in religious practice who don't seem to me, according to my definition, to be people of faith. So what do I mean by this?
Yeah, because I think faith is often confused with belief.
Exactly, yes.
And yeah, but you're not using it in that context.
I am very specifically not using it in that context. Yeah, really what I say is faith is a practice that determines how you believe things. It doesn't say what you believe. And I'm not saying what you believe is unimportant. What you believe is important.
Sure.
But I think I got this idea from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who's one of my favorite authors. What he talked about was that faith doesn't tell you what reality is. Faith tells you what reality means. So when I'm talking about faith, I'm talking about an orientation to life, and it's not something that you prove or disprove. In other words, there's no data that will prove that you're correct to be a person of faith or incorrect to be a person of faith. It's not about what you believe. It's an orientation to how you live your life and how you understand the world. Mm-hmm. So it shapes how you believe. So what do I mean by that? Well, by saying that faith is when you accept that reality is right. By right, I don't mean accurate. That's about science. Do you know what I mean? Science is always trying to come up with the ways of understanding what the facts are. And science, a good scientist will always tell you they haven't got the complete story on anything. They've just got the best fit to the data at the moment. And they keep trying to come up with theories to fit the data better. So that, you know, what the facts are is about science. But what faith tells you is that there's something about the whole picture, whatever it may be, that is right in the sense of good, in the sense of the universe is fundamentally based on good rather than bad or random.
And yet there's not only good in the universe.
Well, that's for sure. Yes. There's Of course, there's all kinds of horrible things. There's evil and there's injustice and there's suffering. And so I don't mean by saying to accept that reality is right, to accept that you have no part in trying to make it better. Mm-hmm. In fact, on the contrary, one of the points I make in the book is the faith that I'm describing is really inconsistent with that sort of dreary resignation, you know, that just says, well, I just have to accept things the way they are. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way it is. The faith I'm talking about says, no, your existence, all of our existence is meaningful. And so we have to participate. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to make judgments of good and evil and right and wrong and just and unjust. And our job is to work for what we realize is good and what we realize is just and what we realize is fair. That's what we're supposed to do. But we also have to recognize that we don't have all the data. And so we have to be rather humble about our claims to truth. And that's where there's a section in the book. You know, it's always dangerous when I have a favorite section.
Mm-hmm.
Like a favorite child. Yeah, like a favorite child, exactly, yeah. And I think it was Samuel Johnson, was it? I never remember exactly who this was. I think it was Samuel Johnson who said, in editing your work, whenever you find a passage you think particularly fine, strike it out. So maybe this passage is particularly fine. I invite readers to feel free to comment on that. But what I differentiate, I make quite a big deal of this in the book, I differentiate between faith and fundamentalism, which I consider to be opposites. Mm-hmm. I realize I have to be careful in that use of the word fundamentalism because there are some religions that would describe themselves that way. And I'm not talking about a description of something sort of getting down to fundamentals. I'm talking about a particular orientation to belief, which says that if you're what I'm calling fundamentalist, it means that you have a dogmatic belief that the particular understanding you have is the only correct one, and anything else is simply wrong and has to be opposed. And to me, that is, aside from being arrogant and unrealistic because we don't have all the data, it also consigns everybody who has a different understanding to the domain of either ignorant or stupid or evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really bad effects. So I don't claim one shouldn't take a stand. What I claim is, indeed, one's always taking a stand, whether we like it or not. I'm saying that when we take a stand from a position of faith, it needs necessarily to be somewhat governed by humility. You know, if I observe, and I have to say this, I think this is a especially Jewish understanding of belief and religion in ways that is somewhat inconsistent with, I'm going to overstate it by saying the Christian understanding. Obviously, there's lots of different Christian understandings. But the understanding that says, no, we've got the only right way is inconsistent with Jewish belief, mainstream Jewish belief.
Mm-hmm.
And so that concept that there are many ways of approaching salvation and approaching God and approaching understanding is a really important value, and I consider that to be a hallmark of faith as I'm describing it. It's like, well, if there are other traditions, they must exist for good reason, just like mine does. And I'm not trying to say that I agree with everything and any, you know, I'm not talking about moral relativism here. Moral relativism would say, well, there's no absolute truth, so you really, there's no basis to judge anything as good or bad or right or wrong. And I am not at all saying that. I'm saying, no, there are definitely bases to judge true or false and right or wrong. It's just that nobody's got a monopoly on that, and we better be careful about our claims about it.
Mm.
And we do great damage when we are not careful about our claims about that. So, you know, a lot of the things that some of the more radical atheists object to in religion, I think what they're objecting to is fundamentalism, not religion per se. And actually, there are some atheists that I would consider fundamentalists because they're so dogmatic in how they approach the concept of religion. You know, humans have evolved these practices of religion, and to simply reject them as evil is every bit as fundamentalist as saying that, oh, no, religion's okay, but you have to have the right one. You know?
Right, and their insistence that, you know, that their way is the only way and that there is no God or there is no higher power.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that can be done in a very fundamentalist way.
Mm. And transitioning from the previous section on panic, you say that faith is the antidote to panic.
Yeah, and exactly. That's really how the seven-word formula added that last part, and have faith. Because you can't be kind if you're panicking.
Mm-hmm.
So now the question is, well, how do you manage to not panic? Because anxiety is baked in. You know, we can't avoid the existence of anxiety. So how do you not panic? Well, if you have this basic sense that the universe is good, that even when things are difficult, even when things are evil, and even when there's suffering and pain, that there's a fundamental goodness underneath it. That is the antidote to panic, because you'll say, well, okay, I'm going to have to deal with difficulties. That's what the anxiety is about.
Sure.
But underneath that, it's good. And so that's the faith I can have. Now, you know, religious people in Western terms, that would be a faith that I think a lot of people derive tremendous comfort from, which is to say that God is good. And we're not going to understand all the ways of God, but whatever God is good. That's a way of saying it in sort of mainstream Western religious terms. But you don't have to be particularly religious to have that kind of orientation to life.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does this have to do with relationships?
Funny you should ask, you know, that this is a podcast about relationships. What I am saying, as they say, kind of the central message, or one of the central messages of my book, is that faith has everything to do with relationships, precisely because when you approach the world that way, it's going to invite ways of managing yourself, like we talked in previous episodes about getting hold of yourself. It's going to make it more possible to get hold of yourself. It's going to invite ways of accepting your partner with some degree of humility, so you can recognize that, yes, you know, I have my ways I like things done, and you have your ways of liking things done, but the fact that yours are different from mine doesn't have to be a crisis. It can even be sort of an enrichment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I think, you know, if I took a fundamentalist approach to being in a marriage, I might well be critical of everything you do that isn't exactly the way I think it should be. If I take what I call a faith-informed approach to being in a marriage, then I'm going to accept you as you are. And I still may have disagreements with you, and I'll bring them up, I hope, respectfully, because I'll recognize that disagreements aren't indicators that you're wrong or I'm right or vice versa. They're just differences that arise naturally between any two people. So it really makes a big difference in how people relate to each other. You know, next time, I'm hesitating to say next time because I'm not sure it'll actually be next episode. That'll depend on our schedule of interviewing. We've got some great guests coming up. But one of our future episodes, we'll be talking more specifically about what is the role of faith in relationships. And we'll get into that more.
Great. And we are at the portion of our program where we take a listener question. And this week, Edna writes, "Dear Dr. Chalmer, after 25 years of marriage, my husband, I'll call him Fred, says he's wondering if he might be gay. He says he's always had this doubt in the back of his mind, but didn't want to say anything to me before. He swears he's never cheated on me, either with a man or another woman. But now that our kids have left the nest, he says he can't get it out of his mind that maybe he's been living a lie all these years. He says he loves me and doesn't want to end our marriage, and he isn't even sure he wants to act on his attraction to men. He says he's just confused and doesn't know where it will lead. This has shaken me to the core. I thought I knew him, and now I don't even know myself. Our sex life has been pretty much over for years, but I always figured that's just what happens in a long marriage. I don't care much about sex anyway at this point. But I can't stand the thought of him having sex with anyone else, and even though we're not having sex, I feel terrible that he's not attracted to me and maybe hasn't really ever been. I just want things to go back to how they were before he told me. What can we do?"
Well, indeed, what can they do?
Yeah, what can they do, and what does this have to do with faith?
What a great question. Funny you should. Yeah, it's like, yeah, because we are revealing here, I'm the one who picked out this question this time. And so you're wondering, yeah, why did I pick out this question
mm-hmm.
to be an illustration of faith? Well, I'll tell you why. And it really goes back to the very last thing she said. She said, I just want things to go back to how they were before he told me. What can we do? And that, and I have to say in my book, this was kind of a pivotal point when I was contrasting two different couples that were mm-hmm. dealing with a different situation, but two different couples dealing with a very similar situation. And one of the couples was displaying faith and the other wasn't. So what do I mean by that? Well, for Edna and Fred, for that matter, to show faith, as I'm describing it, that idea of going back to how things were before, that's not going to be on the table. Mm-hmm. That to want that, and I have to be clear, I'm not being in the slightest bit critical of Edna. It's a very normal and understandable way to feel. She was comfortable, and now something has happened that has shaken her to the core, to use her own language.
Absolutely.
So I don't mean to be critical, but that issue of wanting things to go back to where they were before, to do that, you'd have to basically say that everything Fred said was either crazy or, I don't know what else to call it, crazy or evil or something, something you just have to rule out and deny and say, no, I don't know what that was. Never mind. Let's go back to how things were before. You know, unsay it. That's what would have to happen. And that's not accepting reality as what it is, mm-hmm. even. And it's certainly not accepting reality as right. And so the reason I like this particular letter is that when in working with folks dealing with this, and I have worked, this is not an unrealistic situation in my practice, in helping people with this, one of the things we have to be able to do is actually tolerate the anxiety of accepting the reality as it is and then even embracing it. I'm not saying it's up to Edna to say, oh, what a wonderful development. You know, my husband all these years, you know, I thought he was heterosexual and turns out, silly me, you know, she's not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But to embrace the reality and say, well, there's some rightness here. There's something right about Fred realizing the realities of who he may be. And again, you notice I'm not leaping to conclusions any more than Fred is about exactly who he is in terms of his sexual orientation. He's trying to figure that out himself. But to accept that reality and say, we're going to have to think it's meaningful, that's the essence of faith. That kind of answers that question about how does faith help in a relationship? It's to her credit, I would say. She's not saying he's crazy.
Right.
You know, she's not saying, oh my God, fix him. You know, she's not saying send him to reparative therapy, which is really simply fraud. It's nonsense.
No, but it doesn't seem like she wants to move forward with this. She wants to go back.
She does, but she also, I think, realizes, well.
And she can't, you know, they can't go back.
They can't go back. Yeah, and right. I'm kind of reading between the lines there. I mean, I don't know this person, you know, but I'm imagining that she is accepting the reality here. You know, she didn't say, oh, this is crazy and he's going through a phase and I refuse to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
She just said, this has shaken me. And that itself, that's a good start. You know, so really getting to her question, what can we do? They're going to have to sit with things as they, well, I don't mean sit with things as they are and not change anything, but they're going to have to accept things as they are and then work through it with an orientation toward actual reality as opposed to what they wish it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartrending situations, things like this. You know, from my perspective, when I've worked with couples, and this is, again, pretty common in my practice, I see this sort of thing, you know, be it sexual orientation or occasionally gender questioning or things of that sort, that somebody is questioning something very basic about the relationship and there's no fault here. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like, oh my God, it's a terrible thing that he might be gay. No, it isn't. I mean, I would say as a society, we have come a ways. We still got a ways to go, but we've come a long way in at least recognizing that, you know, there is some percentage of the population that is gay and some percentage of the population that is heterosexual and actually quite a few people who are where those terms don't fit very well. And not freaking out about that is a good start, you know. Mm-hmm. So she's not trying to say, oh my God, my husband has turned evil. You have to banish the demon from him. But she is understandably saying that she's really upset about this and can't just ignore it.
Right. Well, and she also says that he doesn't want to end the marriage, but, you know, that could become a consequence of this
Oh, absolutely. And of course, I think this may be what you're implying. It could become a consequence because she might decide she needs to end it. Mm-hmm. And again, that is a common scenario, you know, and it really is, it's touching. I guess that's the word that comes to mind, you know, as I'm doing this work with couples where I often will meet two good people, caring people who love each other, who care about each other, who've constructed a life together, but something happens that is simply inconsistent with their remaining married. And it's very painful, but often, well, let me get back to the idea of faith. What faith does in this situation is allows for the possibility, more than the possibility, it really is a core understanding that however this turns out, if you embrace reality, it will work out better than if you try to deny it or if you try to, you know, resist it. And that's what I mean by an attitude of faith. It's accepting that reality is right, even when it's painful, mm-hmm. you know, even when we can't understand all the data. And, you know, this particular instance is interesting precisely because it's not clear cut. You know, it's not like Fred hasn't come out as gay. Fred hasn't said, oh, turns out I'm gay, mm-hmm. you know, I need to end our marriage. Bummer, but let's work through it. You know, and of course, there's plenty of situations like that. In this case, he's questioning. He's in that place that lots and lots of people are, where he's trying to figure it out himself. And that's a time, one of the metaphors I'll often use, it comes out of anthropology, the concept of a rite of passage. It's like they're in this state of high anxiety. They're going to emerge from it. They don't know exactly when. They don't know exactly what it will look like. They just know it will be transformed, whatever it is. And that's a state of a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. But if you can manage to hang in there with it, those are the circumstances that allow for growth. Those are the circumstances that allow for intimacy. You know, ironically, Fred finally saying what he's been feeling for so long. She did mention now that our kids have left the nest. You know, that's not an unusual time for this sort of thing to happen. Right. When the kids leave the nest, you can wonder about the stability you've built if it's had the effect of stifling intimacy.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they have stifled intimacy. You know, they don't have a sex life anymore. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I figured that's just what happens, but it doesn't sound like they've ever talked about it. You know, why don't they have a sex life anymore? Yeah. Well, is it because they both lost interest or because he's not interested in women?
Yeah, exactly. So. And for him to then say what he said is an act of great intimacy. Mm-hmm. He was willing to tolerate the anxiety of saying, look, I've got to tell you this. And, you know, even though he didn't have anything absolutely definitive to say, he needed to share with her who he is at this point. He's mm-hmm. he is questioning and he needs her to know that so that he doesn't feel like he's living a lie.
Yeah. Well, if you have questions that you would like us to talk about on the program, you can certainly write to us and email bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit the website brucechalmer.com and ask us your questions, and perhaps we'll read one of yours on the air.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you go to the podcast tab, you'll also see that we are doing guest interviews now. We've done already a couple, and we have got a couple more lined up already. And if you'd like to suggest anyone to us, please feel free to do that. And you can even suggest yourself. And there's actually a link on that podcast tab on brucechalmer.com that will let you sign up for a time for us to interview you. And in the course of signing up, we ask you, you know, what would you like us to interview about? So we'll have a sense of whether we think you'd be a good fit for the program. So we hope you will do that. So Judy, tell us about our next program.
Okay, along the same lines as this, we'll be talking about how does faith help?
So that will be our next program. And as I mentioned earlier, that will be our next program depending on exactly how our interview schedule turns out, because we may find that some of the guests we're interviewing would fit into some other themes. So, but that will be one of our upcoming programs. The book on which this is based, I want to mention the title of it again. It's Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy, and How to Get It Back. It is available anywhere books are sold. In particular, I want to invite people, if you've read the book, to please give us a review on Amazon. And you can do that. I'm pretty sure you can do that even if you didn't buy it through Amazon. Of course, if you did, it's even easier. Because we do like to get more reviews there. It's another way for people to find out about it. And of course, you know, rate it and give us your comments.
And follow us on Instagram.
Indeed. And it's my name on Instagram is Dr. Bruce Chalmer. And also in terms of the podcast itself, we would very much like you to comment and rate us on whatever medium you use to get the podcast, and like and share our posts on social media as well so that more people will get to find out about it. And so, until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.